I'm here to tell you that in El Salvador, it's already dead. But if you want globalism to die here too, you must be willing to unapologetically fight against everything and everyone that stands for it.
Human rights organizations and pro-democracy activists have harshly criticized El Salvador's president, but Nayib Bukele has become an inspiration to many Latin American politicians who admire his tough stance on crime since he resumed office. Recently, Bukele was given a primetime spot at the Conservative Political Action Conference, and he used the opportunity to broadcast his convictions on crimes and the growth of the country. What were his beliefs? How did he make these insane rules? Join us as we delve into President Nayib Bukele's warning about dangerous forces in battle against crime. President Bukele's speech at CPAC. At the recently held American Conservative Union's annual Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington, D.C., El Salvador, President Nayib Bukele condemned globalism and warned about social and civilization decline. The gathering is one of the most important events on the conservative political calendar, and in recent years, it has become a heavily pro-Donald Trump affair, reflecting his takeover of the Republican Party. He said that just a few days after the presidential and legislative elections, in which, by the way, he triumphed over the opposition, they said that globalization would die at CPAC. I'm here to tell you that in El Salvador, it's already dead. But if you want globalization to die here too, you must be willing to unapologetically fight against everything and everyone who stands for it. Fight for your freedoms, fight for your rights. The next president of the United States must not only win an election, but also have the vision, the will, and the courage to do whatever it takes. Above all, he must be able to identify the dark forces that are conspiring against him. The problem is very similar to the metaphor of the boiled frog. Once the water boils, it's too late. People fail to see these things. It's in our nature. Just like the boiled frog, people become complacent, and they don't realize how bad things are getting until it is too late. President Mike also said that El Salvador is a lot smaller than the United States. However, there is a similarity between what is happening here in the United States and what is happening in El Salvador. We also have many isolated problems in the US. As a country, we failed to realize how many problems there were until it became a civil war. By the time we reacted, it was too late. All the experts said it was impossible. Mukali continues, besides, you don't want to wait for 50 years and hope for a miracle to get out of hell. You can still jump before the water boils. Some might say I'm exaggerating, but we can see the signs of a declining society because our society hit rock bottom decades ago. He also stated that it's like when we see someone getting sick. At first, it might just be a stomach ache, a headache, or a small fever. But if you don't deal with the disease, it'll only get worse, and then it'll be too late. Even after our first war in El Salvador, we failed to see the signs of the second civil war that followed. When former President Clinton deported a lot of those gang members without telling us they were gang members, they were criminals. They roamed free and recruited young people, thousands of young Salvadorans, to join the gangs. At first, they seemed like petty criminals, but they began to change and transform until they became the corrupt terrors that we know today. Most of them even performed satanic rituals, and this has been well documented. The government back then didn't deal with the disease, nor did the next administration, nor did the ones after that. The disease that had begun with mild symptoms got worse and worse. It became a cancer that seemed incurable. We are already seeing these symptoms in the United States. Big cities in decline, like Baltimore, Portland, and New York, just to name a few places, where crime and drugs have become the daily norm and even accepted and promoted by the government. Furthermore, he asked, how many young people have you lost on the streets of Philadelphia or San Francisco? To relax? Did we see these apocalyptic sights 5 years ago? Can you imagine how it will be in the next 510 or 15 years? He said the same thing was happening in El Salvador in less than a decade. Gangsters control the country and society. They evolved into a parallel government, controlling elections and even political parties. Every aspect of the daily life of most people was controlled by the gangs. The murder capital of the world is a tragic title to hold. Getting rid of that was the bare minimum we had to achieve to even start thinking about rebuilding our country. But jumping out of the water when it's already boiling is an almost impossible feat. President Mukele also said, "The experience was not a good one, yet they did the unthinkable to cleanse the society. They arrested the terrorists, but they still have to remove corrupt judges and corrupt attorneys and prosecutors and free the gang members." And it wasn't just the gangs, the corrupt system, working with the so-called international community, the NGOs, and of course the fake news, just like it happens here in the United States. Unelected bureaucrats are trying to instate public policy, and they don't have a democratic mandate. He affirmed that if they want a seat at the table, they should run for office. Let the people vote. It will not be a pretty sight for them if the elections are free and fair. I mean, who elected Soros to dictate public policy and laws? Why does he feel entitled to impose his agenda? He further denounces George Soros's global influence and agenda. The Salvadoran president questioned Soros's authority to dictate public policy and laws, challenging the man's right to impose his vision on sovereign nations. Add that Soros and his cronies had hit a brick wall in Salvador, and that Salvadorans are now immune to his influence and lies. During his speech, President Bukele emphasized the importance of not automatically yielding to external pressures, saying that by not yielding directly, you become their enemy, and they use all of their machinery to try to destroy you. He argued passionately that nations should not succumb to external influences that contradict their values and sovereignty. President Bukele did not move words when he addressed Soros directly, saying, "Who elected Soros to dictate public policy and laws?" The Salvadoran leader questioned the legitimacy of Soros's attempts to shape the political landscapes of various countries while stating the need for self-determination. He revealed they just had a free and fair election, and he won in a landslide with more than 84% of the vote. More than 84% of the people voted for the continuation of our policies. Victory is achievable in the history and modern democracies in the world. They also gave us an upper hand in the Congress. Also, in addressing the people, he said the people of El Salvador have woken up, and so can the Americans. The global elites hate our success and they fear yours. The people's free will to choose their leaders is something they despise because they cannot control that. While still addressing the population, he said they have experienced being controlled by the elites in the United States, where the global aristocrat controls the mainstream media, finance campaigns, and district attorneys. Unlike in El Salvador, where they don't weaponize their judicial system to harm the political opponents. This practice may sound familiar to the Americans, but it's not done in El Salvador. There will be a dictator, controlling the stories and publishing pictures to reinforce their agendas. But they dealt with such situations in his country. He said that he always criticizes the defenders of institutionalism, not because he thinks strong institutions are important and necessary, but because he finds them very hypocritical. They don't seem to have the same standards for themselves as they are trying to impose on others. But there is yet another component that is more dangerous than a simple double standard. Institutions were created to serve the people, not the other way around. Then as they progress, they forget their fundamental purpose, which is more important than the institution itself. The judiciary system was necessary out of necessity to bring justice. But now, the survival and control of the judges and the attorney generals are paramount, and the need to bring justice is merely a little more than an afterthought. Another instance is the police set up to bring law and order, but it seems they are scared to do their job because they fear the consequences of doing it. However, they should be encouraged to fulfill their functional roles without fear of consequences that distract them from their mission. If the police were created to bring law and order, then they should do so. If the judicial system was created to bring justice, let them bring justice. They should protect their purpose at all costs. The same goes for the press. They should be set free. A democratic rule needs a free press that adheres to their duty as a reporter. They should report facts and not be puppets to those who finance them. They should work for their freedom of speech, and it will always be protected. Since everyone believes in freedom of speech, then it will always be protected. But journalists should not act like an activist. It's time for everyone, especially Americans, to fight with all their heart and soul for the original aim of different organizational setup. He encouraged that it's not too late to call for the right way things should be done in society. It's time to erase these new paradigms that have been imposed in recent years that make no sense to a free mind. This shift is an extremely dangerous trend that undermines the effectiveness and credibility of these organizations. More symptoms of institutionalism are difficult to diagnose. For instance, the financial situation of the United States doesn't encourage high taxes. though some of my conservative friends do complain of high taxes. The real problem is not the high tax, but the fact that they are not funding the government. There are some places where their taxes are higher, but they can't cater to the government's needs. From the time Mukele resumed office, his words and actions have been loud on anti-crime. He always made his point known on an international scale. What other speech has affirmed his beliefs? Mukele's battle history against crimes. During his speech to the United Nations General Assembly in 2023, Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele trumpeted the success of his gang crackdown, citing his administration's will in the face of international criticism for human rights violations. Bukele claimed that if El Salvador had listened to external critics, including some at the United Nations, the small Central American country would have become the world's murder capital once again. He said, "Today, I have come to tell you that debate is over. The decisions we made were correct. We are no longer the world's death capital, and we accomplished this in record time. Today, there is no doubt that we are a security model. Here are the results. They are irrefutable. Over 72,000 people have been arrested as a result of a state of emergency declared by Bukele in March 2022 in response to an increase in gang violence. Congress granted Bukele special powers, which suspended some fundamental rights, such as access to a lawyer and being informed of the reason for one's arrest. Critics claim there is no due process, and thousands of innocent people have been caught up in the security issues. More than 7,000 people have been released due to a lack of evidence of gang involvement. In March, the United Nations Human Rights Office expressed concern about the year-long crackdown, citing widespread human rights violations, thousands of unsubstantiated arrests, and dozens of people in custody have passed on. However, Bukele's security policies are extremely popular in El Salvador. They might likely be the focus of his re-election campaign next time, which is prohibited by El Salvador's constitution, but permitted by court justices appointed by his supporters in the Legislative Assembly. As Bukele noted, Salvadorans can walk freely in their neighborhoods and allow their children to play outside without the oppressive fear of gang recruitment and violence. El Salvador was ranked as one of the most violent countries in the world in 2015, with 6,656 homicides, or approximately 106 per 100,000 people. In 2023, the National Civil Police recorded 146 homicides through September 18th, which is more than 72% lower than the same period last year. El Salvador's newfound security has drawn more international visitors and is attracting Salvadorans who fled long ago to avoid the violence, he said. Bukele mentioned the Central American and Caribbean Games, which El Salvador hosted in June 2023, the upcoming Miss Universe competition, which will be held in El Salvador in November of the same year, and international surfing competitions that Bukele has promoted. He said he knows there is still much work to be done, but we are on the path to achieving our goal of reversing the massive exodus of Salvadorans, a result of all of the wrong policies of the past and the civil war, and arriving at our dream of having inverse migration, in which more Salvadorans return than leave. El Salvador's President Nayib Bukele, in a national address commemorating his fifth year in office, promised to build a prison to house white-collar criminals as part of a corruption crackdown that he compared to his fight against criminal gangs. He declared that just as we fought the gangs with the full force of the state, we will launch a full-fledged war against corruption. Just as we built a prison for the terrorists, we will build one for the corrupt. Bukele also used the opportunity to announce bills that would reduce the number of deputies in the country's unicameral Congress from 84 to 60 and divide the small Central American country's 262 municipalities into 44 districts. These bills will need to be passed by Congress. Bukele began a brutal campaign against the country's violent gangs in 2022, suspending constitutional rights in a so-called state of exception. The policy has broad popular support, but human rights groups claim that innocent people have been caught up in the crackdown. In February 2022, the government relocated thousands of suspected gang members to a newly opened mega prison. In his words, he added that he will fight white-collar criminals wherever they come from, but it will be through legal means. The words and actions of a man say a lot about his beliefs and personality. Who is Mukele as the president, and what has he done? The world's coolest dictator, President Bukele, who describes himself as the world's coolest dictator, was re-elected to a second term recently. His popularity skyrocketed as he cracked down on crime and gangs in El Salvador. After his election in 2019, he transformed El Salvador from the world's murder capital to one of the region's safest nations. Despite his popularity, President Bukele remains a divisive figure. Human rights groups claim that thousands of people have been arbitrarily imprisoned during his anti-gang campaign. Mr. Bukele was the 42-year-old former mayor of San Salvador, and he has gained support from American conservatives for his harsh criminal justice policies and for allowing Bitcoin to be used as legal tender. He was elected in 2019 with the promise to create a new era for El Salvador, combating gang violence and corruption, and improving relations with the U.S. During his first term in office, his administration conducted widespread arrests of anyone suspected of gang involvement. An estimated number of 75,000 people have been detained under emergency measures that have been repeatedly extended, alarming human rights organizations. Amnesty International recently condemned the gradual replacement of gang violence with state violence in the country. Mr. Bukele's re-election was controversial in and of itself. According to the Constitution, he was barred from running for a second consecutive term. However, in 2021, the Constitutional Court, which was dominated by his supporters, granted a president to run again, as long as a president stays in power for the period preceding the second term. Mr. Bukele minimally resigned as president several weeks ago to meet this requirement, and he'll be sworn in June. However, Bukele has strong support. Salvadorans credit him with restoring security to a country that had one of the world's highest homicide rates. The government appears to be winning the battle against the criminal gangs that once ruled the country's poorest neighborhoods, using violence to extract protection payments from residents, small business owners, street vendors, bus operators, and taxi drivers. Bukele's stance on crime attracts experts' views on his victory in his re-election. What do they think about his victory and its effect on El Salvador? Bukele's re-election and insane administration. Mary Speck of USIP, in discussing the implications of Bukele's victory for El Salvador and U.S. foreign policy with Mark Feierstein and Ricardo Zuniga, senior advisors to USIP's Latin America program. She said, Bukele's election victory cements his position as Latin America's and possibly the world's most popular leader. She then asked Feierstein what the polls say about his strengths and weaknesses as he begins his second term in office. Feierstein replied that Bukele's success in combating crime has increased not only his astronomical approval ratings, but also trust in Salvadoran institutions such as the police, armed forces, Congress, and judicial bodies. He said, moreover, the discharge execution of Bukele and the administering party reflects the deterioration of the two conventional parties that overwhelmed Salvadoran legislative issues from the 1992 peace agreements. His overpowering triumph owes something to the measures that the Bukele government has taken to threaten fault finders and confine the capacity of autonomous teaching, just like the press, gracious society, and the private division to function unreservedly. Feierstein also said that in case Bukele's objective is to concentrate control and run the show of uncertainty as the world's coolest dictator, yet his approaches and political standing are not maintainable. Open surveying offers a few caution signs. Whereas Salvadorans, particularly those in lower financial bunches, are justifiably satisfied with the emotional enhancement in public security, they express concerns over measures utilized to attain that advance. Dominant parts restrict the rearrest of persons who served a sentence or were found guiltless, dismiss the suspension of the proper defense, question the captured without legal orders, and oppose this idea of confining suspects for more than 72 hours without clarifying the premise for the capture. A clash between Bukele's ends and strategies seems inevitable, particularly since the government has to create an arrangement that would give for the possible discharge of detainees. Furthermore, Speck said the relations between Bukele's government and the Biden organization have been rough in the past. The United States endorsed high-level Salvadoran authorities for arranging a mystery truce with PAC pioneers in December 2021. At that point, Bukele spurned a welcome to the administration's Summit of Americas in June 2022. As of late, the organization appears to have chosen to keep feedback private, freely lauding respective participation on particular issues as excellent. She asked Zuniga, a senior advisor to USIP's Latin America program, where relations stand nowadays, taking after Bukele's avalanche triumph. Zuniga responded that Washington a long time ago had been previously estimated in Bukele's re-election, despite sacred limitations on re-election. His concentration of control within the hands of the official, his broad popularity, and the failure of political adversaries to form progress made his February 4th triumph inescapable. Amid his moment term, Bukele will likely assist in solidifying control, curbing seen rivals, while growing part of his Modern Thoughts party in Salvadoran society. Zuniga further states that in this troublesome setting, the United States is likely to center on concrete zones where it can progress U.S. approach destinations. Sporadic movement remains a top concern. Indeed, even though Salvadoran citizens are not currently traveling to the United States southwest border in expansive numbers, these numbers seem to tilt upward given the tricky state of the Salvadoran economy. The United States trusts to lock in with the Bukele government, both to advance economic financial development and to empower a conclusion to the state of exemption with reasonable trials and the assurance of human rights. The preceding challenge for Washington will be how or whether to address Bukele's dictator tendencies while keeping up a valuable relationship with a pioneer who is touchy to any feedback. Zuniga pointed out that Bukele, in the interim, shows up fulfilled with a redress in the event of a not-so-cheerful relationship with Washington, but he has not paid a price with the Salvadorans for his occasionally tense relationship with the Biden organization. Salvadorans still esteem great relations with the United States, given their reliance on settlements from the around 2.5 million Salvadoran-born transients within the states. In a moment, Bukele appears set to lock in the United States on things that progress his residential needs, whereas proceeding to strongly dismiss evaluations of his political demonstration from Washington. In another Mary Speck interview with Keith Mines, vice president of USIP's Latin America program, he examines how El Salvador can maintain security gains while also upholding the rule of law and protecting human rights. Speck stated that during the campaign, Bukele pledged to maintain his government's emergency measures, warning voters that his opponents intended to free gang members. Is there any reason to expect Bukele to change his hardline policies during his second term? To which Mines responded that the state of exception has been extended 22 times. Some hoped that the government would adopt policies that would guarantee former gang members a fair trial, rehabilitation, and eventual reintegration into society. Instead, the exception is simply being formalized as a way to deal with criminal threats. The government appears to be determined to keep suspects in prison, despite the high social, economic, and human rights costs. Vice President Felix Ulloa agreed to this fact in a statement with Financial Times. He said that for those accused of terrorism, sentences are cumulative. You're seeing sentences of 200 to 150 years. The majority of them will be there for life. Mine continued, however, now may be the time for Bukele, who has declared that the country is on the verge of winning the war against the gangs, to shift to a strategy that preserves his popular security advances while restoring law enforcement. Such a strategy would include several components. First, it would establish an individualized system of due process for those incarcerated. El Salvador's Legislative Assembly has approved a bill authorizing mass trials of up to 900 suspects at a time, which will be unprecedented in the democratic world. Due process entails granting individuals the right and means to defend themselves in court, including against charges of gang affiliation. As Washington Office on Latin America President Carolina Jimenez Sandoval observes, forcing individuals to be judged collectively will turn the presumption of innocence upside down. Second, the government should hold citizen security dialogues in municipalities, enlisting civil society organizations to help enforce the rule of law. The lack of citizen agency in their security was one of the factors that allowed gangs to take control of some neighborhoods in the first place. While these discussions are likely to generate criticism of some policies, they may also generate new ideas to help maintain the rule of law and prevent vulnerable communities from falling prey to criminals. Third, the perceived need for a state of exception exposed structural flaws in the security and justice systems. The inclusion of military forces in many day-to-day security operations, a role for which the military was not designed or trained, simply masks deficiencies in civilian police forces, whose job it is to investigate, apprehend, and detain individuals suspected of criminal offenses. Mines suggests that the Bukele government should take advantage of the state of exception to launch major police reforms, retool forces to enforce the law, and prevent violence within a citizen security framework. The temptation to avoid reform and double down on harsh measures that appear to be working at the moment will be strong. However, the cost of long-term mass incarceration is high, particularly in a country where people are the most valuable natural resource. Keeping one out of every 45 Salvadoran adults in jail may not be the most effective long-term economic strategy. A shift toward a more sustainable, justice-based system could preserve security gains while also providing economic benefits. It is the right thing to do, both morally and practically. What are your views on the actions and rulership of President Bukele? Leave them in the comment section. Also, while at it, kindly like, share, and subscribe for more related content.